The Colorado Springs Independent was a beloved community institution for 30 years.
The Indy was near and dear to our hearts, but change has been in the air.
From ownership by John Weiss to a nonprofit, back to a for-profit owned by a couple of local businessmen.
And now, sold again to another businessman.
We'll discuss changes at the Indy and the state of local news media.
Next on Loving the Springs, the podcast that celebrates the best of Colorado Springs and Manitou and strives to elevate the rest.
This is Peak Community, Studio 809 Podcast.
I'm Carrie Simison.
I'm Al Brody.
And I'm Dave Gardner. We're recording in the Studio 809 Community Podcast Studio at The Next Us, a professional cooperative environment for small businesses in downtown Colorado Springs.
On April 21st, the one-year-old 2024-2025 version of the Independent shut down, terminated all its employees, and announced it had been sold to Colorado Media Group. Why the sale? What might be its future? And how does this story fit into the overall local news media landscape?
Now, Carrie and I both have a history with the Independent, and Al, I think you've been a longtime fan, right?
I am a fan, and I always looked forward to seeing what Pam Zubek was digging into next.
Well, we've invited one independent journalism expert and another expert and former Indy staffer to join us in studio and discuss today.
So thanks so much for being here, Corey Hutchins and Matt Schnipper.
Sure, I was trying to figure out which one was which in that description.
Thanks for having us. I appreciate it.
I guess I was a contributor to the Indy, but never a staffer.
Yeah, and I spent almost 20 years there in some capacities. So
right, 3 years or so as an editor.
Yes, I did do the head editor role between 2016 and 2019.
But most of the time you were having fun as the food and drink editor.
Correct. I did visual arts for a while, too. I had a sustainability column for a brief time. I started doing listings and all the data grunt stuff. But by the end, I feel like I had my hand on just about everything before I departed.
And of course, we know Carrie had her hand on many aspects of it as she worked her way up through the ranks.
Yeah, I had the pleasure of basically growing up at the Independent, starting as a graphic designer and working through almost every position except editor and leaving eventually as publisher.
And I was a huge fan at first because that was the only publication that would publish my op-eds. The Gazette was ignoring me. Eventually, when we launched the community radio station in Colorado Springs, there was a little bit of collaboration going on. I spent a lot of time in your office, Carrie, trying to talk you into starting a radio program.
You sure did. And look at us now.
Sure. Took a while. But then I ended up as a contractor for the Indy as their executive producer of podcasts for a short time and working very hard to try to keep the old Indy we knew and loved alive as it was struggling in its last days. Corey, you were the first one who alerted me to the fact that the Indy just changed hands in April. You publish a really great Substack column that every journalist in the state subscribes to for sure, and that's called, what's that called, Inside the News in Colorado?
Yeah, Inside the News in Colorado every Friday on Substack at coloradomedia.substack.com.
But you also hold the hands of Colorado College journalism students in many ways too, don't you?
I oversee the Journalism Institute at Colorado College, which is maybe 5 or 6 years old now, so a relatively new program. 50 minors, we're graduating 15 seniors with a journalism minor this month. And some of them have done work with the Indy over the years. We had students do their best of coverage in the past. At least two students have had cover stories for the Colorado Springs Independent. So, you know, I kind of see that paper has been a partner with the Journalism Institute. And, you know, my background's in alternative weeklies. I started my journalism career at an alternative weekly, the Free Times in Columbia, South Carolina, worked at the Charleston City Paper. And, you know, we always hear, I never got to go to an AAN conference back in those days, but I always used to hear about the Colorado Indy staff at the AAN conventions.
We were slightly misbehaved at those.
We definitely lived up to our reputation.
Yeah, so that's the Association of Alternative News Weeklies. For some reason, the Colorado Springs Independent had an outsized reputation at their annual conference.
Well, and that's a great segue just to the notion of Alternative News Weekly, which is what the Independent was. And apparently we've been losing Alternative News Weeklies for several years now, haven't we?
We have. There was a real heyday in media where even when people weren't reading traditional daily newspapers. They weren't maybe necessarily watching as much broadcast television, et cetera. They were still really looking towards alternative news weeklies, which some stayed in print and some went fully digital. But because they had the content that kind of a younger, more active generation wanted, the listings that Matt was talking about that he had first started on, I mean, what to do in your city. I mean, that's one of the main things we knew people would come to alternative news media for. But on top of that, when Al mentioned Pam Zubeck, I mean, we also had one of the few places where you could publish like multi-thousand word investigative journalism. And the topics were really anything. Like, it wasn't really limited specifically to, you know, general news. It was limited mostly to local or how something national might be affecting something local, but there really was nothing off the table.
Yeah, and you'd also get multi-thousand word spreads on visual arts, music, food, a number of other topics that, again, would go much deeper than you'd see in the Daily or any other news here in town. So we really got to stretch our legs there and explore topics like better, more robust. I feel like there was a run of years there, I don't know, maybe 2008 to 2015 or 2016 or so, where things were great. I think we had a full newsroom. Everyone felt supported. We had strong writers on every desk. And week to week, just the covers were solid. The whole book was solid. That was sort of before the decline years where things just slowly started to fall off.
Yeah. These were the kind of punky, underground, funky counterculture organs of a city of a certain size. And working at one was amazing. You could call in hungover and not get in trouble. There was beer in the office fridge.
You could go in hungover and not get in trouble.
That's right. Yeah. If you passed a drug test, they might look at you askance.
Thanks, Corey, for that great description. So there's been a decline in, you know, really there's been a decline in print news, a decline in traditional news. They've all been struggling to make ends meet with the advent of digital ads and digital media. But I think the alternative news weeklies have been particularly hard hit, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, and I think the pandemic was like an asteroid, because a lot of these publications, they made a lot of their money on in-person events, and those disappeared during the pandemic. Colorado, you know, was interesting in that we kept ours. All right, if you think about like Boulder Weekly still around, Westward still around. Mm-hmm. The Colorado Springs Independent, we'll talk later about to what extent it's still around or not. But like the cities where I lived, Albany, New York, the Metroland's gone. Where I went to college, Syracuse, New York, that paper doesn't exist anymore as far as I know. The paper that I started at, the Free Times, got absorbed by the local daily newspaper. The city paper that I worked at got sold. So what happened to the Colorado Springs Independent is a reflection, in a way, of what's been rippling across the country. But also there are some singular events here that makes it a lot different, and I guess we'll get into those later.
Oh, well, I'll look forward to hearing your thoughts about that. Maybe I'll venture to give a really quick recounting of the last 3 years at the Indy. So the Indy, it was clear that something needed to change to keep the Indy in business. I think John Weiss was looking at that. And I know some alternative news weeklies had gone nonprofit. And in fact, other newspapers had been going nonprofit as well. And he and the other powers that be at the Indy decided that was probably what they needed to do. And that was when I got involved, because I was running a nonprofit called Citizen Powered Media, and they asked if we would be interested in maybe absorbing the Indy, that it needed to go nonprofit. So I was on the board when the Indy went nonprofit. And about the same time, they were going through a rebranding to change the name to 6035.
That was painful to watch.
Oh, it was.
It was, I don't know, I'll be the guy who says the things today. Yeah, I mean, it was a bad brand. I was personally against that from the beginning. And I just thought you had 30 years of legacy tied up in the prior brand, and the new one that was selected was completely lame, in my opinion. The 6035 was just, it was not great.
Was that the demographic they were going after, age 60 to 35?
I'm not sure.
Well, I think part of it was they decided they really needed to combine the Colorado Springs Business Journal, which was part of the John Weiss publishing empire. They needed to combine that with the Indy. And so they felt like they needed a new brand if the two of them were going to be together.
It was a little strange, because in some cases you would see the bigger eat the smaller. And in that case, a lot of us who were myself on the sort of at the fringe at that point felt like the smaller ended up eating the bigger. And it's like the Business Journal staff and leadership sort of ended up taking over. And I think that's where the culture of the indie really died off. And I don't think that ever came back. So I don't mean to speak to you in a disgruntled way. I guess I'm speaking just sort of the way I see it, how it went down. But, you know, I'll be the one to say today, I don't think the indie's ever come back. I think we've seen a shadow of what it was culturally. And I think it's kind of like watching like Pet Sematary or The Walking Dead. Like there's something shuffling around, but that's not the thing it was. It should have maybe stayed in the ground.
Jeez. Yeah. So, you know, that rebranding was poorly executed, and it was happening at the same time that it was shifting to a nonprofit. And there was just a lot going on and not enough staff to do it. And the culture was already shifting. Yeah.
That was a giant change to happen under the minimal amount of staff that was left after the pandemic and everything. That would have been a ton of work for the staff size we had in the heyday to both go nonprofit and rebrand.
Yeah.
So I can't imagine what that put everyone through that was left on staff at that time. I don't envy anyone that was there, and I was glad it wasn't on my plate at that point.
And then, of course, they found a $300,000 budget snafu in the process.
Yeah.
And I don't know if we ever really heard the full story there about what happened.
I don't think anyone has ever spoken completely candidly about that.
It's just not a headline you want to see come out. It's just sort of like, wait, what? And it doesn't look good. Like, hey, who was doing the books?
Yeah.
Who didn't have oversight? Who dropped what?
You know, I'll just go out on a limb a little bit, and maybe I'll be in trouble for saying this, but I will say that the bookkeeping was a disaster. It really was. Mm. And so that became yet one more log on the fire. There was just so much heavy lifting to be done to try to keep the indie alive and preserve the heritage, the legacy that was there.
Well, you just used the word preserve, and a lot of us have been talking about how the archives were destroyed and never came back. And I don't think we will see them come back at this point from conversations I've had, and it's unfortunate.
The new owner is on record saying essentially, we'll do what we can to bring these back, yeah?
Right. I've heard that, but in other conversations I've had off record, I've been told it would be extremely expensive with uncertain outcome to get them functional again. And from what I've seen on the back end, when I tried to get in last, when I was still a contract employee and had access to certain things, what happened is each migration, each time there was a change, including the move from the Indy to 6035, you know, originally we left Foundation, went to Town News or something, but that was botched. The every single article ended up publishing with the exact same date. And if you were lucky, the original published date was attached. You know, photos lost their cut lines, subheads and heads were broken, paragraphs would sometimes be missing something. It became unreadable to an extent, but also most importantly, unsearchable. So even now, if you go on the Wayback Machine and you know what you're looking for and you go fishing, you might be able to pull something, but the layout's all broken. And so the likelihood of ever getting back something searchable like it used to be, I don't think it's going to happen. And it is sad for us because I have 15 plus years of my own archives tied up in that I won't be able to digitally recover. So
it's not just about the writers, though. I mean, this is civic memory.
Yeah.
Right. Institutional memory of the 40th largest city in the United States that just went into a sinkhole. I think it's unacceptable.
Yes.
What you're saying?
Yeah. Like,
I was shocked to see it disappear.
Right, get it back. Yeah. Do what you can to get it back.
There was a time where I was vocally advocating, give it to the Pioneers Museum, give it to the library, give it to the Gazette. Somebody should preserve 30 years of history so that someone in the future can look back and say, what did Pam say about Doug Bruce at the time? What was happening with this? What was happening with that? It's tragic. And now it's more of an issue of the people who are there today in charge or picking the pieces up. They're looking at stuff that was done 5-6 years ago now by someone else. So I'm not going to fault them for what they can't control. You come in, you find a mess, that's not on you necessarily. Those who were there at the time, people who were involved in that, I don't think it was ill-intended or anything, but just stuff happened that, let's just call it sloppy. Like, yes, it should have been done right. Someone should have had an eye on that all along and said, this is critical, this has value. Even when I went to a nonprofit, what is the value of an archive to a nonprofit? How do you sell that back to a for-profit? I've had those questions. I don't understand. Maybe Corey can answer that, but the whole thing has been confusing. But in the end, the word is tragic. We've lost that local history. That whole independent period has been erased.
Well, if I may, I'd just like to use the opportunity to hold the new owner accountable, because he did say publicly for the record that he will, quote, make every attempt to transfer everything that they've done while trying to access, quote, any backlog of historical information.
And I would challenge that even one step further. There was a very important article that just recently published in the last Indie that disappeared completely and was scrubbed. So I would like to see that come back, one of Pam Zubek's most recent, finest reporting efforts, gone. And we, I think Corey as well has already spoken to this, find that to be journalistically unethical and inappropriate to have something scrubbed at the last minute while there's a changeover. So I want to see all that come back, if anything comes back.
Well, let me real quickly finish updating anyone who hasn't been following the story. So the accounting system was discovered to be in a shambles, and there were some serious debts, and the rebranding was botched, and the organization attempted to move to kind of a subscription model, kind of like members of our local public radio station, KRCC kind of thing. And that wasn't handled well at all. I mean, nothing got handled well. It was a fire drill. And there was about a year of struggle trying to get that all sorted out. And finally, it just wasn't, they were running out of money. So they finally, at the end of 2023, just closed their doors and said, I guess we're just going to have to give up. But then a few months later, a couple of local businessmen, multimillionaires, J.W. Roth and Kevin O'Neill, decided to pick it up and purchased the brand, the assets, the archives, and relaunched The Independent just a little over a year ago. And correct me if I'm getting any of this wrong. I think I've got that. And so we've been watching for a year to see what that was going to look like. And personally, I never said it publicly, but I figured I'd give it a year and that they would figure out they're never going to make money and that they would tire of their toy if it was going to cost them money. So it didn't surprise me to see a change. But I understand that it was starting to look like it might become profitable soon. None of the public statements are that making money was the issue that caused them to sell. So J.W. Roth and Kevin O'Neill, and we can talk more about them if you want, but they recently sold their new company, Pikes Peak Media, sold the Indie and the Business Journal to an organization headed by Dirk Hobbs.
Colorado Media Group. They have North Magazine and the Business Digest are the two that I'm most familiar with under them.
Yeah, kind of an interesting business publication. And I haven't really read it, but I get the impression it's not really a hard news business journal, that it's more pay-to-play kind of stuff in it. Am I right about that? Or
I haven't specifically had a conversation with Dirk about style, but every time I get it, kind of flip through it. And a lot of times you'll see an article that's got a logo from the company dropped in the end. So I have to assume it's somewhat advertorial, and they're approaching business folks to be writing their own articles or collaborating with them potentially for a charge because they have logos and stuff in the end. You don't see that in any traditional media or even alternative media generally.
I would say, just to add to what you were saying about the year under JW and Kevin, I don't want to sound like a total pill from what I was saying earlier. I want to give it some credit. This year saw some improvements. They brought back some original, not original, but old school indie people from way back. There was some good reporting. There were some nice articles that came out. They had pieced together a music section first, makes sense, because the amphitheater and the other holdings they had, they were really interested in music. They started to put together some better visual arts coverage, which was necessary. That whole beat had been dropped, and no one had really been doing the proper reporting in this town. We had a big hole for that. And then they actually did not ever bring back any food section, which I think is a major something lacking that a true independent alt weekly would need. I mean, food and drink is huge in these cities in the past. Uh-huh. So there was some things there, some things still needed to come, but they seem to be building and heading the right direction. And again, there was a really awesome news story there at the end that I was referring to that got scrubbed, that was some of Pam's best work in a long time. So there was things there that maybe will transfer into this new iteration that are worth keeping. So,
well, it was a year before they hired Pam Zubek to do a story for them. I was thinking, well, that she's never going to come back. But I thought that was a hopeful sign. Al, you're a longtime fan and you've been watching it. Did it seem anything like the old Indie during the last year?
The Pam Zubek article certainly did. But no, like you said, there were a few articles that were worth, wow, this is important information. But
yeah.
And I go back to New York City where we had the Village Voice, which I don't know if it is the grandfather of all these other independent newspapers, but it's got to be one of them. That was the heartbeat of New York City. I mean, if you were in Manhattan, that was the place to go before the internet. That had everything you really wanted. And I think the early indie was very much like that. And then there were the cannabis days where was the last third of the Independent was cannabis article or advertisement articles, whatever you call them. And then the shift to what we had recently this past year, I still read it. I still picked it up. I was still excited to get it. So it's a mix.
Let me tag on a little bit there. So when you talk about the Village Voice, it absolutely was the grandfather, the grandmother, the grand marshal, the grand master, the grand everything. It paved the way for the industry. And part of what was great was the distribution model of alternative news weeklies were free distribution in high traffic locations that people that were active and interested in arts and culture and counterculture frequented. And so you would purposefully find this publication and go pick it up. So you knew the people that had it in their hands were reading it and seeing the ads. And that's how the advertising model was successful, because it didn't appear as junk mail. It didn't get thrown on your front porch, whether you had time or not to read it that day. Where as people have, you know, gone to maybe more digital media, a lot of the news weeklies have been trying to figure out, okay, if we still need the print revenue, how can we still print and get this out to people and get advertising revenue? And when you started things, and at some point, I think even when you and I were still there, Matt, we were doing some amount of mailing, but when you mail to people who aren't asking for it, and when you mail to people who are different from week A to week B, as an advertiser, you're not sure who the demographic is. You're not sure if once it arrives at the house, anyone is opening it. You're not sure if it's going right to the trash. And so that business model, I know, had to be difficult to convince advertisers in, because they didn't know who was seeing their ads, if anyone was seeing their ads, and price-wise, it was still a decent price.
Well, and it was really a burden to keep printing all of those free issues. And so, you know, in those last days of the old indie, they were cutting back on the print issues and trying to go more digital. And the advertisers, they weren't crazy about that. They wanted to see those racks out there.
And here in Colorado Springs, at least, when marijuana became medically legal, that really is one reason I think the Independent was still able to thrive in those days when some of the other alternative news weeklies across the country were going out of business, because the daily paper wouldn't accept marijuana ads, radio wouldn't accept marijuana ads, TV wouldn't accept marijuana ads, and we were really the only place that could do it. And like you said, it was the back third. Like, that was the money that gave us the opportunity to continue paying staff and freelancers and editors and printing, which gave us a really good chunk of, man, almost 10 years where we were one of the only places that would take it. So
it does need to be said that there was something in the news release from the Pikes Peak Media that they had sold. There was a paragraph in there indicating that it had become apparent that there was a difference between their editorial hopes and the actual reporting at the paper. And I'm not paraphrasing that very well. Does anybody remember what that was?
Some of the verbiage was conflicting with their values, if I'm not mistaken. I'm not looking at it right now, but I recall the word values, which I found surprising to read, maybe overly candid or transparent, because it could be interpreted as the conflict of interest everyone worried about. Like, hey, you buy a newspaper and you control editorial, or you put your nose where it doesn't belong. And although at the time, I believe they were saying we're going to be hands off and stay hands off and the newsroom's the newsroom. But when I read that word values, I kind of cringed and was like, ooh, that's, I don't know. I wasn't there. I haven't looked into this, but it sounded, my interpretation was, wow, there might've been some conflict between pressuring the newsroom or something. And hey, well, you guys are doing stuff we don't even like or want. And maybe that's not what they signed up for when they bought this thing. So that, anyway, that's a word.
Yeah, you have that, Corey?
Yeah, sure. They said that they found it increasingly challenging to communicate their vision and values through the platform as they had intended. And, quote, ultimately, the alignment between leadership and the editorial direction of the paper no longer reflected the voices they sought to represent.
Well, and it was about a year in before we started seeing editorials that really did reflect their values. You know, toward the end, we finally got a J.W. Roth editorial or two, and one from Kevin O'Neill, that I kind of felt like they came out of the closet and started talking about the kind of things that I think they hoped they could talk about by owning a newspaper.
Yeah, but that's not super unusual.
Right.
So,
yeah,
you know, Phil Anschutz, the billionaire owner of the Gazette newspaper, as I understand it, what his editors have kind of said to him is that, look, first of all, stay out of the news coverage. It'll just destroy credibility. And if you want to get involved, you do it through the opinion side. And so, you know, to me, it wasn't that shocking to see the owners having their own opinion out there. It showed a picture of who they were. It said, this is an opinion. What was interesting was the content, or maybe not interesting, really. You know, was it Kevin O'Neill? He's one of the owners. He's a big developer in town. He's the guy behind the skyscraper, right? Mm-hmm. Other new developments or proposed developments. Wrote a column about how the Springs should embrace growth and business. Like, that's not surprising.
Got my attention.
J.W. Roth, you know, he really kind of harshly attacked a sitting member of city council for what he called like a legacy of, what was it? A legacy of something. It wasn't a good word.
Yeah.
And used the whole column to basically say without saying that voters should, you know, throw the bum out. And then that guy winds up winning by 16 points, which was more than anyone else on the ballot. And so part of me wonders if talking about like not being able to effectively communicate their vision and values also wasn't realizing that owning a newspaper isn't as effective as getting your message across as like using dark money to bankroll the opposition or, you know, spending money on direct mail advertisements. If that's true, and I haven't seen JW or Kevin speak publicly about this, I did reach out and ask them if they wanted to chat and I didn't hear back. You know, that's just something that I thought about. Maybe they also realize, like, we're not just getting what we wanted out of this thing, even when we get the opportunity to put our voice in the paper.
Well, my understanding is that there wasn't a lot of articulated tension between the news staff and the owners. If the owners weren't getting what they wanted, they were not engaging the staff in regular conversations trying to get what they wanted. And I think that's an interesting point, Corey, about maybe figuring out that they could be more effective using PACs and...
I could have told him this. You know, I remember when there was a city council race for my neighborhood, the Gazette endorsed somebody, the Indy endorsed somebody else, and the person I voted for wasn't endorsed by either of them and won. And so what was I supposed to think of that? Like, I'm a man without a paper? That meant to me that either both of the newspapers, this was the former Indy before it went nonprofit, didn't reflect my community clearly and didn't have enough juice to move the needle when they made an endorsement. So people get their news and information from a lot of places these days. In a newspaper, I think even the opinion section is just not as effective as it used to be. It's possible they realized that and it took a year to do.
So I'm thinking that, you know, we've been slowly losing the old Indy, which really was a rebel. It was irreverent and counterculture and just incredibly valuable and important to have. And I think during the last year, especially, Al, I think you're generous in your estimation of it. I think it's been largely disappointing, not terrible, but not the old Indy. So the question is, are we going to get, what's coming next? What do you guys think we have to look forward to? And of course, we don't have Dirk here at the table, and we might invite Dirk to come and talk to us, but we do have some quotes and some history to go by to take some educated guesses. Anybody want to opine?
Well, just yesterday, I got a copy of the Digest digitally, you know, link with just a little bit of note about this. And it said, the COS Independent will be relaunching the first week in July 2025, sometime after the July 4th, with a new title. So I imagine that means they're going to rename it, rebrand it.
Sounds like it.
Rich content and deep coverage of the arts, entertainment, hospitality, attractions, events, sports, and outdoor lifestyle scene. Readers will be in the know on all events, concerts, fun places to go, where to escape, best places to relax, eat, drink, enjoy your Colorado lifestyle, and so much more. So, I mean, that is a pretty robust, that's a pretty robust promise. And if they're, let's see, that's 2 months out now. We're got all of May and all of June to get there.
So it could be everything but the news.
Well, Dirk's on record saying that it won't be the Indy of old. He told me that for my newsletter when I wrote about this. He said he'll put their fingerprints on it. I always thought it was odd that the Indy also owned the Colorado Springs Business Journal.
Yeah.
To me, I don't know. I chafed at that. Like, I came up with an alt-weekly background. We wrote stories that we called, like, the big fuck you. You're not going to do that when you're, you know, you're not a business publication. Or I just felt like, and now this is essentially a publication or a publishing house that is majority a business publication. That's like a boostery kind of thing, right? They want people to move to the Springs or like to understand the Springs and to like help the business culture here. And so having this kind of indie, it can't be an alt weekly. This reminds me of thinking like imagining Dilbert at a punk rock show. It's just going to be awkward.
I'm going to put links in the show notes to Corey's reporting and every story that I know about. There's a CPR story, a couple of Gazette stories. So I'll put links in the show notes so anyone interested can go back and dig through this. Go ahead, Matt.
There are a few names in the masthead we're looking at here for upcoming with this new iteration of the Indie, it looks like. And, you know, the director of operations was our former CEO. Digital director is intact. It looks like they have a writer at least worked with us on a contract basis before. So there'll be a few, as you said, like lingering fingerprints of it, perhaps in the form of those who are still standing that join the new organization. Again, can't speak for exactly what level of depth we're going to get in all these areas they mentioned, the arts, entertainment, the, you know, outdoor, et cetera. I mean, to me, it just sounds like there's bits and pieces of other existing things, like Springs Magazine does a pretty good job with the outdoors, and someone else on the digital side handles ski sports and things. And I mean, I'll be curious myself to know how much food and drink ends up in there. I haven't had any convos with them. Transparently, in the past, I had been approached by the latest iteration of the Indie to possibly write for them. I said, no, I could possibly sell you some content. We never came to terms and it never went anywhere. So I've not been approached by these people and I wouldn't have any different offer anyway. It would be like, if you want to buy from my publication. Anyway, I'll just be curious if they actually go deep and are really robust in any one of these arenas, or if they're really generalist and just kind of touch things here and there and just add to what we already have between Springs Mag, the Gazette, and, you know, even the TV news stations, which nowadays just tend to reprint press releases more than do a lot of reporting.
Yeah, I don't think we need another lifestyle magazine or even Lifestyle Plus, so I'm hoping it doesn't go too far in that direction.
But I don't know why they couldn't lean heavy into arts and culture and bring on Cannon Taylor. I thought some of that work that Cannon was doing was necessary and had been missing for a while.
Yeah, I agree.
Great fresh voice.
Right? Yeah. Like finding these stories, that's what I love, is picking up the Indie and be like, wow, I didn't know this. Like, I'm going to go to this thing now. So I think it would be smart to do that. Bring back Cannon Taylor.
Yep. Well, let's be hopeful. I want to share a couple of quotes from a Gazette story that lower my hopes a little bit. One is, some recent articles published under Pikes Peak Media Group in the Indie have been, here's the quotes, a little aggressive, end quote, Hobbs said. And then back to quoting Hobbs, we want to raise the community up. We don't want to tear people down, end quote. So it doesn't sound like Pam Zubek's going to be. It
doesn't sound like they're going to get the big fuck you article.
No.
No, I mean, I wouldn't be interested either. If I can't do food criticism that's honest, I wouldn't say yes to that. And even to Corey's point earlier about, you know, an alt-weekly under a business journal, that even during that era where I had to report to leadership who were more coming on the business journal side, I still did some critical things. One of my most inflammatory ever that, you know, I still hear about, that caused a big kerfuffle back then. So I had that leeway back then to still do honest work.
Yeah,
that's what I would call it, honest work.
It was kind of a train wreck.
It was a train wreck. Good one. So, you know, if this is already telling you up front, we won't have too much teeth. You know, we're going to be really soft with you. Okay, well, you're not on All Weekly. You are probably more lifestyle, and that's going to leave any of that kind of reporting to, I guess that's just the Gazette that's left. And
the Pikes Peak Bulletin, I think, could be well positioned to pick that up. So Pam Zubek already writes a column for the Pikes Peak Bulletin called Pam Zubek Has a Few Questions or something, right? It's a column where she basically just throws questions out there. It's an opportunity for the Pikes Peak Bulletin to maybe see if they can raise some money, get some grants, get some support from the community to pay somebody like that to answer those questions instead of just ask them. That's another place where I see maybe that could pick up some of the more aggressive news coverage in the area.
And they seem to be kind of on the rise. I mean, they were a part of the Indie and kind of were closed out and restarted with permission and kind of impressive looking.
I think the big if is the money, though. How well funded are they now? And what is the likelihood they can get to where they need to go to afford a Cannon Taylor, to constantly to afford more regular coverage from Pam and to be able to buy the content they need that they don't produce in-house? It's again getting back to us just basically pining over the Indie that we won't get back. I mean, that era, that ship has sailed. Again, the cannabis money's gone. The town has not stepped up in some way to say, hey, we're willing to fund this as a community, much like KRCC or whatever. So that's probably where, and we'll probably come to this later in the conversation about other new wave media that's arising in the wake of what kind of died off. But yeah, I would love to see Pikes Peak Bulletin get strong. It just, I don't know if it's going to happen.
We'll see. And then I have one other quote I want to share from Dirk Hobbs that is disappointing to me. Colorado Springs is part of a bigger macro discussion called Southeast Colorado, and we want businesses to choose this area, whether it's Colorado Springs, Canyon City, or Castle Rock. So it sounds like it's a promo. You know, it's kind of like a typical business journal can be.
Is that that pro-growth bias that you see in the mainstream press, Dave?
Yeah. It's just all about growth. Let's bring more businesses here. And that's not news reporting, I don't think. That's all I have to say.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's super important to acknowledge. It absolutely is. Saying there right off the bat, that is our bias. We are pro-business. We are pro-growth. We want to bring people here. It's interesting where people who are involved in journalism like to kind of wag their finger and say, you know, oh, we want to keep bias out of our coverage. And it's always interesting to me what bias is allowed, right?
Yeah, because it's going to be there.
Or like what bias isn't controversial.
Yeah.
I mean, back in the early days of The Independent, the first iteration, we never claimed to be, let's see, what was the appropriate term? We always claimed and let people know that we definitely had a left lean. Like there was no question whatsoever internally. We were going to do fair reporting, but we were certainly a left-leaning publication. And if you're transparent about what you do, it's a different story. So again, like you're saying, if right off the bat, the new owner of the Independent and Business Journal or whichever publication or radio or TV we're talking about is like, hey, this is what we do. Like, just let me know what I'm in for. Don't make me think I'm coming to something that's fair and balanced or centrist or whatever. But yeah. I mean, definitely, if you've got a point of view, tell us your point of view and then just live it.
Good point. So I think an important question, which maybe really brought you all into the room, is how are community members going to get their news and information and engagement going forward? What's the future look like?
I think Matt's a great example here. When you were laid off from the Indy the final time, you knew that that was going to leave a hole in food and drink coverage specifically. I mean, that is your area of expertise. There are certainly other holes. But I mean, what you've done with Side Dish with Schnipper and Tap and Table podcast and what was the food series of podcasts called?
Oh, State of Plate.
State of Plate.
Produced by Dave.
I think coming out of that was really obviously a survival method for you, but it has kept the person that we know that has the most expertise in Colorado Springs area, greater Colorado food and drink criticism, like top of mind. And I'll let you talk about Substack a little bit. I mean, how did you decide to get there? And, you know, what did it take to make sure we didn't lose that from the Indy?
Partly I was following the model of even Corey's Substack existed before mine. I had to pivot quickly. It all happened within a week, really. You know, getting laid off and then thinking on my feet and then deciding to launch. But to Carrie's point, yeah, I did want to keep doing what I do. I wanted to at least bite off that one section and say, I'll do this. You know, I've done visual arts in the past and the other things I mentioned, but I can put everything else aside. I don't need to edit other people's news content now. I don't need to write about sustainability or music or any of those things. I can just do food and drink. Let me just aim for that one thing, make sure this exists and stand this up. And the path forward I found was, yeah, self-publishing. So Substack allows us to, gives us tools to, you know, publish on that platform and monetize, create reader subscriptions, support. And so the direction I went was to continue just like nothing had changed for my part. You know, hey, that very next week I have, here's your food news, here's your events upcoming, here's some little mini reviews I call Dine and Dashes on some places to go eat, and just kept going. And I think, you know, I've talked to Corey's journalism class about this. I've been invited, and Corey would be better to speak to, I think, entrepreneurial journalism as a whole and what he sees in his reporting around how other people have done this. So maybe I'll give him a platform for a second to do that, give some more context. I can tell you a little bit more about Side Dish and what I've done.
Sure. So the model of the newspaper was a bundle, right? People didn't just come to it to read the news. They came to it to buy and sell a vehicle or a couch. They came to it to read the sports section, the arts and entertainment section, to read the comics. And now it's basically just news. And the folks who run it found out how expensive that is to produce and how few people will actually pay just for that. And so without that in the Springs, people will just kind of a la carte this stuff on their own. So to buy and sell furniture or a vehicle, they'll go to Craigslist or they'll go to Facebook Marketplace. To get arts and culture coverage, I'm not quite sure if nobody's producing it where they're going for that. To get their food and drink, they'll go to Side Dish with Snippers, Substack, because they'll find it. Somebody will send them a link or they'll come across it on social media platforms. They're connecting and finding people to do electrician work on their homes or something through these giant Facebook groups that have names like Word of Mouth Colorado Springs that have just thousands and thousands, tens of thousands, maybe even hundreds of thousands of people in them if you add them all up. Or What's the 411 for the 719 is another massive Facebook group that some of us here might like. I like looking at that stuff. It's actually pretty interesting. And so there's a lot of different places where they can go for free to get their news and information. What we're going to miss is the accountability watchdog reporting that the Colorado Springs Independent used to do, right? Who will fill that vacuum? I'm not sure. And the problem is there's just not really like a financial market for that. Where the funding for that comes from largely is through private philanthropy and grants. And that's why a place like the Pikes Peak Bulletin, I think, you know, to your point, Matt, about how are they doing financially? I don't think well. I think, unfortunately, they're probably struggling getting the robust funding that they need to do the kind of work that we're talking about. And that takes the community stepping up and realizing that without it, it goes away. And a real question is like how much they really want it.
Yeah, it's like training media literacy. Like if everyone just resigns themselves to reading whatever pops up on their phone in terms of the Apple News or whatever, and that's fine. We can get our national or international news that way. You can listen to your BBC podcast, to your New York Times Daily for that, the global coverage. I do that. But when it comes to local and our community, you have to start mindfully curating and looking for what you're interested in. And again, the Facebook groups are great. We started one during the pandemic for food and drink called Culinary Colorado Springs. That's still going. Mm-hmm. There's a COS Foodies that's also really robust. But, you know, I too will go to those. Sometimes I get story leads off those. You'll see these hilarious little posts on the 411. You're like, oh, that's interesting. That's telling you a little story about a neighborhood. Now we're at the granular level of reporting. Like if I were in a newsroom and assigning stories, I would say, hey, put someone on that. That's interesting, right? You get some weird stuff like that on Reddit too, all those little subreddits and stuff.
Yeah, so some, and I'd be interested in what like the Daily Dose 719 was doing in Southeast Colorado Springs, right? They had this podcast and digital site and then had like a physical space, a coffee shop. What's it called?
Stomping Grounds.
Yeah. Like that model is pretty cool. Yeah. So maybe we'll see interesting things like that pop up to fill some gaps. And that one kind of does so in a regional way by kind of basically saying like, there's no one else reporting on Southeast Colorado Springs. There was the Southeast Express that got kind of eliminated in the roll-up. It was part of the Colorado Springs Indy.
Yeah.
Isn't anymore. And so maybe you'll see regional publications like that. People will get their information and misinformation from nextdoor.com. Those are widely popular in neighborhoods. And it's like if you aren't really careful about how you vet your information, you're going to be consuming stuff with a lot of germs on it and maybe even spreading stuff that's not true. I think that what I kind of see in the future will happen is that the kind of fact-checked and reliable journalism will even start to migrate into those platforms where you might see people in those groups meeting people where they are and doing their journalism directly into a large Facebook group or even on nextdoor.com. We're not there yet, but it's kind of that kind of idea of, hey, this is where folks are getting their news and information. Why don't we meet them where they are?
Corey, can I ask you a question about the future as well? Mm-hmm. So being in journalism academia, what are you training the future journalists? Obviously, you're training them in journalism, but what are you training them for outlets? Are they still being trained for broadcast positions and traditional reporter positions? Or how do you approach this with a 19-year-old who really wants to be in journalism when they get out of college?
Sure, they definitely get that training. But, you know, as Matt said earlier, we're bringing people like Matt Schnipper into our class. And the name of that class is called Inbox Journalism Writing for Newsletters. And it's about entrepreneurial journalism and how to break into the creator economy. And I tell those students on day one that there is something called 1,000 true fans. And then in the creator economy, that is if you can persuade 1,000 people to give you $10, only $10 a month, That's less than they might pay for coffee. If you can persuade somebody to give you $10 one month and it's 1,000 people, you can make $120,000 a year working for yourself on your Substack platform.
Good point.
And so we teach them that. I teach a class called The Future and Sustainability of Local News, where we bring in folks who are kind of part of the media thinker industrial complex. And I consider myself one of them with what I'm doing with my newsletter Inside the News in Colorado. And students who graduate Colorado College leave with a really good appreciation for the importance of local news to society and democracy, but also a real sense of the reality of the industry out there. And we'll graduate 15 minors this year, 12 is about average. And I still see students going into the traditional newspaper or local public radio station. Some will go into kind of some new media ventures, and what they will leave CC with is knowing how to do stuff on their own and to be entrepreneurial. And I kind of do something that, you know, I didn't feel like I got in my traditional journalism education, which is teaching folks how to freelance and how to pitch stories to editors on the medium of their choice, whether it's in documentary filmmaking to pitch a piece for Rocky Mountain PBS or to pitch a piece for Colorado Public Radio or KRCC or the local newspaper, but also teach them like how you create your own platform. Because the way people consume journalism will become, in my view, more splintered, more fractured, and more niche. So you become that authority, and you become the next Matt Schnipper in your community. And it doesn't have to be about food and drink. It could be about anything that you're passionate about. 1,000 true fans is good, but you can make a decent living right out of college with 500.
I think I am a bit of an outlier in terms of how my Substack took off, because I was working from my existing community here. Now, if someone graduates Corey's class and tries to just run right out and start a Substack, they aren't known yet. So yeah. Let's just take Canon. Canon's already been published in the Indy. If Canon gets 5 more years in this community of solid publishing, there's a likelihood then they could take that and leverage it into their own arts Substack and fill that void here and say, hey, everyone, arts community, if you want to, the Springs to have a vibrant arts community as we grow, come to me, right? $5, $10, whatever. I'm a little over 2 years in, and only about 10% of my audience is paid subscribers. And it's elective. You know, you can come in free. I want to grow my audience of free subscribers also. I'm happy for that. It's wonderful. Every single person who gives me $5 a month to read, or 50 a year, you get a little break point if you do the annual, but I can't rely solely on that. I know that. I knew that from day one. The reader support's not going to come in like this. People don't want to pay for even Netflix or Amazon Prime, right? They want to share it with their partner or their friend. And so, I mean, everyone's sharing 10 passwords. Like, let's be real. Like, how many people can you get $5 from, even if it is less than the cost of a latte? But that's okay. Like, I am fine. I'm happy to grow a giant free audience because I can leverage that to an advertiser then, right?
Okay.
The tricky part, and I consulted with Corey on this before I launched, just at a mentor level, was how do I maintain the church and state, you know, no conflict of interest, ethical approach when I have to literally wear all the hats? I have to be editorial and sales. I have to be editorial and marketing and this and that. It's really challenging. So the way to do it is just right up front, transparency. You know, I tell my readers, like, this is my funding structure. I have a link on my page you can get to that it just explains what I do and how I do it. I created a sponsorship group called the Side Dish Dozen. I decided I would bite off 12 businesses that if I could get a reasonable check from them each month, they would pay for journalism for everyone else. Kind of like taking chess pieces off the board. Hey, they're off the board. They're not going to be written about critically by me anymore because now I've done business with them. But guess what? There are 600 other restaurants in town I can now cover completely clean and just, you know, display my one conflict area with these guys.
So that means Pam Zubek could make a fortune selling memberships. You know, if you join this club, Pam Zubek will not come calling.
That's a good way to sell it.
the new business model for journalism.
Yeah, it's tricky. In fact, when I go home today, I'm working on a story, which coincidentally, just this week, something happened. It involves one of my sponsor members. I can't not say something about it because it's news. They've made it their own news. It's out on their own Facebook now. The community's going to wonder what happened to this location. It just closed.
Uh-huh.
However, it is not appropriate for me to do any reporting on that because I would appear biased. Oh, that's your client. So even when I get the quote from the other party, oh, well, clearly he's going to favor his client, right? You know, I call him clients, sponsor, basically. But so I'm just not going to touch it. I'm literally going to say, hey, this happened. This is what they said. I'm going to let the other person comment. I'm leaving it at that. And then I'm going to specifically say, this is where my reporting on this stops. Now back to the other story. And people can say, oh, that's unfulfilling. Well, guess what? Someone else can pick it up. I just gave it to them. But that's what I have to do. Right in front of you, I need to show you my hand so you know that I'm aware of my ethics and my line and my integrity. If I lose that, if my readers think I'm for sale, it's all over. I can't lose that. So I have to keep faith with them.
Wow. Interesting. You know, Loving the Springs is sort of a part of this landscape, one of about 14 local podcasts in the Studio 809 podcast collective, and most of us are really focused on, you know, informing and engaging local audience, and I felt like it's been a real struggle to get the audience to find us.
What is the demographic of a Substack consumer? Who is doing that?
It's kind of all over the place. It just depends on the content, you know.
Yeah, it probably is all age groups, like 20-something to 60-something, but probably more in the 30s and 40s.
Skews older than college students because I have intimate knowledge of the relationship among college students and their inbox, and it's pretty awful.
But is it a bell curve, or is it like just randomly across the age groups? Because I'm a Generation Jones, stuck between Generation X and the boomers, if you haven't heard of Generation Jones. I just learned about it recently, but I am definitely that. And I know of Substacks, but I read none of them.
Yeah.
And it's not that I don't want to.
I think there are people out there. I wonder if you're one who actually does and doesn't realize it. Do you get newsletters? Do you get news in your inbox?
I do, mostly through Instagram.
I'm talking about your email account.
I don't even look at my email.
So then you're not a Substack consumer.
I can tell you, though, is when I publish sometimes some of my best weeks of audience, I might get 3,000 people direct on platform, but another 2,500 who've come in through Facebook or Instagram or somewhere I shared it. So you might be an example of, you might have read something from me that you saw on Instagram through one of the links, and then you ended up back on my page without knowing it, or you read a snippet of 1 week. We chunk out our content and we do little teasers. So you might have read one column out of five that week or something.
Yes.
But you found me, or you know I exist, or you've seen my logo or something. So the key for me is to get you to convert and click the blue button and get it to your inbox. Now that I've heard that you don't check it, I don't want you because you're going to mess my open rate up. So don't do it. But someone else like you who does read their email, I want them to click that blue button because, you know, it's like, hey, you're already reading it. Why don't you just get it to your inbox and quit doing the extra work of having to pull it in from somewhere else?
I want to apologize to you because I always intend to go back and read your column, and I rarely go back and open it. So now, from now on, I'm just going to open it even if I don't get to
Open rates are very precious to us.
Well, and I think an interesting thing, so we were talking about as podcasts and local podcasts, like we think what we're doing here is picking up a little piece of that news and culture kind of across the board. That's something like an alternative newspaper used to do. Yeah. And the difference, you know, when you talk about print has long, people like to read. I think people these days maybe like to read shorter things, but you guys are still getting great audience with reading because it can be delivered to my inbox. I can see it came in. I can click there and read it right now, or I can decide to go later. I can scan through because there's a little bit about it. And when we go to podcasts, just a whole different medium, whether, you know, I think visual and TV, especially something longer, TV is a little different way. Like, I don't know what I'm in for this next hour. Mm-hmm. When do I have an hour that I can sit and, you know, kind of turn everything else off? Or if I start this for 20 minutes, am I going to remember to come back? And so it's interesting to get the audience.
Corey used the term bundle, talking about newspapers. And you're talking about where do I get the time? And I'll tell you where I had the time. It was the commute on public transportation with the newspaper in my hand.
Yeah.
That was being, not doing, just being. And the newspaper was that bundle. It was the ability to just sit in a park or sit on a subway, and you didn't know what, maybe you did know what the next page had, but you would go from sports to finance to food to, oh, this just happened in the community. Like, I need to read about this. And you could just be. And I think that's what I miss. I miss just being. And that's where the indie was really good. You could just have that bundle. And
how old are you?
66.
And so that's why, you know, there's fewer and fewer people like you around.
I get that. But there's a lot of us around.
Yeah.
So you're right. We are a dying breed for sure. But right now, there's a lot of us. Yeah. And we have money. And we are used to being at least part of our lives. And there's no place to just be. Like even Tejon is losing a place to be. The things that we used to do to go into have been replaced by you must buy something. You go from one buy to another purchase to sit and purchase a drink before you go buy something else. Mm-hmm. There's not the sit in the park for a bit, sit on a bench for a bit, and just watch things go by, reading the newspaper and talking about it.
Well, and I think when you talk about a commute, that's when I still get my audio. That's always where I listen to radio. It used to be KRCC. I'd get in the car. It was the only – I had two KRCCs plugged in my car, one for when I was in Manitou and one for when I hit Colorado Springs. And I'm lucky because I have a very short commute, less than 8 minutes from house to work if I'm driving. Mm-hmm. A lot of times Spotify. But once I'm finally in the car where I know I'm going to be there for – you know, at least 15 minutes, that's when I can listen to podcasts or audiobooks or whatever it might be, because I've got a dedicated amount of time where I can't be interrupted and I can consume. And so when you were saying, you know, that's where you could do the print when it was public transportation, and that's where I do it in my car now. And then you have so many people that no longer have a commute to work. They work from home because pandemic changed us to all this remote. And so it's again, how as a traditional media, even though podcasting isn't, you know, traditional radio in the way, it's like, how do we talk our listeners into committing the time, and where can we get it if it's not in a commute? Where are those other places?
You guys are just all pointing out how hard it is. So for us, like, it's not good enough to just write your column, make the news, do the thing, publish the story. I have to work so hard to get that story out and in front of you and in the way you want to consume it somehow.
Social
in
media
the
right time. Sucks now.
Yeah, it's miserable. Really, I mean, it is miserable because social media will, you put a link in, then they're going to downgrade it and the algorithm won't favor that. And you got to, now you got to put your link in the comments instead. Or, and you try to lead with a photo one week or you lead with a, you know, whatever. It is maddening that, I mean, here's just one example. Like, I'll put up stuff on my Instagram. That's one avenue where I have to publish. I'll put up a thoughtful video where I went downtown and did some work and, you know, put a lot of reporting into it. And I spent time to cut this nice, cute little video just like the influencers do. And I put it up and it's got like, I don't know, 2,000 views, 800, 1,000, whatever. But
2,000 is pretty good.
I'm on a trip a couple months ago. I was in Wisconsin and I was at a friend's and we made maple syrup from like just from the trees. And I had this wonderful weekend of being in the woods and doing all this cool stuff. But I put up the most inane, like 20-second clip of like some maple sap boiling and nothing, you know, just there was nothing to it. And it had like 8,000 views. I'm like, wait a minute, I just got four times the audience over some like thing I
knew
threw
you
out of
trying.
Nowhere. Yeah, when I wasn't trying. And that doesn't help me. Like, I'm trying to dial in, how do I reach you? How do I get my stuff read every week? And you get these curveballs that are like, it doesn't matter. Just, you mentioned the shotgun. Now we just throw it all at you. Like, I got to find you somehow. I'm going to hit you with something.
Yeah.
Well, that's why I like, so my newsletter, Inside the News in Colorado, that's why I like the inbox. That's why I like the Substack approach, because I've just cultivated a loyal audience who will read it. You know, and they'll read it because they expect it. It's like one of the few places now that's like appointment reading. Mm-hmm. They know they'll get it on Friday, and I know X amount of people will read it. I can tell by the analytics.
Well, it's an easy place for people to give you a tip or, you know, to pay if they appreciate what you're doing.
Corey's talking about the gold standard. That's my loyal readers. I've heard from some that are just so lovely. They'll say like, hey, my week's not complete till I read this. Or I'm so excited when this shows up on Friday. I read it immediately. I'll stop what I'm doing. Or, you know, I had elected officials let me know that they're regular readers. I've had, you know, other prominent people who've just commented regularly and let me know they're there. The best thing is when you hear someone breathing on the other line, right? Like, that's what you want. You don't want to be writing for the ether, you know, then it's just a self-gratifying act that I'm not here for vanity. Like, I'm trying to make a living. I love the industry. I love what I'm writing about. So I'm still trying to serve the eaters, the chefs, the food and drink industry people who I used to be one of them. That's what I came out of. So that's the culture I'm immersed in. That's who, you know, I believe our city, as it grows, deserves good food content to fuel the good food scene we're trying to grow. We want to be that next great food city. You know, we're talking about trying to get Michelin here. We're talking about what is it going to take to be a great food city.
So we're over an hour already. So if you're commuting from Colorado Springs to Fort Collins, this is a good episode.
Go ahead and head to Cheyenne. Keep going.
If you're driving to Texas, then you could listen to this episode and you could listen to State of Play, which is a great
five-part
series.
We got you for about 5 hours then.
Yeah, which was a really great piece that Matt and I worked on. That was all Matt's content about the state of the food and beverage industry in town.
We might have to do another one of those sometime at the five-year mark or something and see where we're at. But especially if we do get Michelin down here, if things progress significantly, it will be another touch point to say, where are we? And again, I'm thinking now all food and drink. That's my lens. That's how I walk out and see the world now. So someone else might do the similar thing with music or visual arts or growth and development. And when do we get the big sky rise? Whatever. For me, it's about, when are we going to have consistency across the board of excellent quality food, from the hole in the wall taqueria to, you know, the Broadmoor fine dining or whatever. That's what I'm all about, is watching new things come here too. The trends you're seeing in big cities, when we finally get them, we know we've arrived. And we're about 5 or 10 years behind Denver on a lot of things. We always have been in terms of the food and drink. So I want us to be catching up to that and ahead of it even, where you're like, wow, that thing exists in the Springs before it opened in Denver. Wow, that's cool.
Well, and I do want to say, kind of as we're starting to wrap and we're talking about State of Local Media, I'm hopeful that someone still wanted to buy this brand, like with going back to the Indie and the Business Journal. Like, the fact that it existed for the 20 plus years that it did in the form that Matt and I knew it and Corey came in, and then the fact that they tried to pivot as everything was changing, you know, it didn't work. The fact that someone else 3 times in then wanted to buy it, with Roth and O'Neill having it, and they figured out, you know, wasn't their jam. Okay, so now we have a fourth entity who still looks back at the Independent specifically in the Business Journal and said, this is important enough to Colorado Springs to try and make a go at it. It's not going to be the scrubby alt paper where we all sat in what's now the Mining Exchange building in our first offices. It's not going to be the marijuana heyday. It's not going to be the nonprofit. It's not going to be run by the developers that had a real plan for it. But someone in this community looked at this brand and said, we can't lose this. So we don't know what that means, but, you know, kudos to Dirk Hobbs for saying there's something important enough in the Colorado Springs Independent and the Business Journal that I want to buy it and see what I can do with it. So we'll see what that means. I mean, it could go any which way. And I know we all have opinions, being as deep into media and with as intimate as a relationship as we've all had with it. But I mean, I'm hopeful that there's something we can love about this new version of it, and that it's not going away.
And your being here makes me hopeful.
What a great soundbite. Listen to this episode.
I want to agree with Carrie so much in my heart, because she was my publisher and I love her. But I'm going to add a but here. I'm reading something you put on our desk here in front of us, this email on May 6th from Dirk to their email list. The very first line is, the Independent will be relaunching in July 2025 with a new title. So I keep going back. I'm stuck on this. If you have a new title and you have so few standing staff that come with it and you have no archive existent, what exactly did you buy? Why don't you just rebrand and say, hey, it's gone. We're going to start this other thing. It's going to fill some of the void. But
yeah,
I don't even know if it's not going to be called The Independent, it's not The Independent. The Independent is done as of July. So
I don't know, man. I went to the Black Sheep and I saw Black Flag play, and I think they had one original guitar player. And it was still a cool show.
But they're still called Black Flag. It's like
at least they kept the name.
But like, there won't be an Independent as of July. There's no Independent now, right? So it's going to be whatever it's called, but within a matter of months, there's no signature of the left of The Independent. And if it had Pam week to week, if it had Canon and there was a consistency between this last iteration and it, but I don't see that there's anything that we know is coming that will anchor it to even the last iteration.
Let's say, Dirk Hobbs, one great community service you could do is just put CSND back up.
Get to work on those archives.
Put those archives up and just keep that separate and start whatever you're going to start. But it was tragic that we lost all that history.
So I did walk through the old Independent building within the last couple months to actually pick up a kegerator, speaking of having beer on staff that I knew was still on hand.
Did John you find Weiss my bong? I asked you to find my bong.
And in the basement are still the physical bound copies of the Independent. I don't know how far back they go. So
who
we used
that
to
building right now.
John Weiss still does own it. But we used to collect one copy of each and then eventually send them to be bound. And I don't know how long they kept that up, but we need to talk to John, get our hands on those, and potentially
straight
get them
to the Pioneers Museum.
Pioneers
exactly.
Museum.
Yeah, exactly.
So at least that physical copy of books lives on up until, when did I leave? In 2016. And it was right up around there that we were at least collecting them. I don't know when they stopped binding them. But.
Yeah. So after this episode wraps, Carrie's going to go talk to John and go take care of historical preservation
yes,
while
yes.
Corey and I go out to lunch. It's going to be great.
Any last comment before we do close?
We can't close. We have to ask him what
okay.
they love.
All right. That'll be
about the spring.
Happy
okay.
to do that.
What do you love about the springs?
What do I love about the springs? The location and the weather.
Okay.
I love that. I'm going to stick with food and drink. That's what I do. I do love that I live in a city where on any given day with any particular craving, I can find something, you know, Korean, sushi, certain kind of beer, whatever. I feel like we are big enough to be a food city. We're on our way up. And so I love living in a place with the challenge in front of us to keep getting better. Like, I love the challenge to grow us into the next great food city.
I got to know, what is the best slice of pizza?
I'm not jumping in on that. I mean, that's super subjective.
Of course it is. I'm asking your opinion.
I don't do best. It is the common question, but I don't want to single out this one place and be like, this is it.
Because if you were to take me as a New Yorker to get a slice of pizza right now
New
for
Yorker,
lunch.
I don't know. I mean, that's a whole different thing. I don't know. I'll just throw one out for fun since you want pizza. But I would say go check out Pizzaria, the place that pops up 2 days a week in the Nightingale over in Lincoln Center. Excellent product. And if you haven't done that yet, that's a fun one.
I haven't done that.
Yeah, that's it.
That's awesome.
It's outstanding.
I am glad I asked the question.
It's really good. Yeah.
Well, I hope that you guys will come back anytime. This has been a great conversation. Really appreciate your investment of time and your commitment to media and the news media in town. Thank you, Matt Schnipper.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you, Corey Hutchins. We'll put links in the show notes. I think we've mentioned your Substack columns enough that people know where to find them, but look in the show notes if you have a short memory.
And I might check my email.
At least on Fridays. Well, that's it for this edition of Loving the Springs, where we celebrate the best and elevate the rest.
In the Pikes Peak region, there's no shortage of activities. Whether you're experiencing breathtaking parks or magnificent works of art, if you're getting fashionable at a film festival or fresh at a farmer's market, if you want to hear the sweet sounds of a symphony or the smooth shred of a Stratocaster, look no further than Peak Radar, your one-stop shop for all events in the Pikes Peak region, your free source for viewing and posting events. So no matter how you engage with our beautiful region, visit peakradar.com and get plugged into the peak.